knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and the long stem rose.
Everybody knows. Hey, good evening, everyone. Hello, it's the Fakeologist here. It's April the 1st, 2024. This is Monday. This is the All Shots Clot Show. This is where we talk about vaccines and vaccine injuries and the whole COVID vaccine revolution that's before our very eyes right now. This is where I talk about my sublog, allshotsclot.com. And the whole reason I created another blog away from the Fakeologist blog is just so I could keep these two issues completely separate, even though, of course, I think they're pretty linked. And I'm going to bring up the All Shots Clot page if I can find it here. I apologize for those who think I spent all my time dealing with technical glitches. Hello, Skate and Destroy. Hello. Thank you for joining on the FakoTube platform. Thank you to everyone who donates to the Fakeologist show. I really appreciate it. Let me bring up the Fakeologist donation page right now. Fakeologist.com/donate. These are the fantastic people that come here and donate. I really appreciate you guys, and that's why I show up all the time. We have our monthly donors who said it, forget it. Mark Tukarski, Gibby, Kirby Sex Ret Lady, Andy, Greg, Ezza, Daniel, John, Mum with Sons, Harmon, Nick. It appeared to bank sharply. Epic Souls, Pepper, Anders, Harvest Moon, Stratman, Waterman Chris, go find the others, and Bing, and Robert K, and Nancy, and thank you all you guys. And thanks to the single amount donations, recently we had Peggy B, Diana, Kathleen, Anonymous, Toby, Alexis. Yeah, we don't really get a lot of donations, but the few people that do, we really appreciate, especially a lot of females. I guess I'm hitting a female nerve or something, but thank you guys. You guys are really gracious in your donations and support for independent media. And hey, Blondie, hello. Blondie, yeah, we're not on Facebook anymore. We gave up on Facebook. We got kicked off a few too many times. So we'll stay. I'm not going to waste my time on Facebook. I might re-establish a Twitch connection, but I don't think that's really necessary. And let's see. We're taking phone calls. Yeah, the whole point of this show is it was supposed to be a phone-in show where people called in with their vaccine injury stories or death stories. And I was going to get a few guests here and there, including Tracy Northern, but of course she's no longer with us, which really sucks. And a week ago yesterday, we had a memorial show for Tracy. And I had talked to her many times. Not recently, though. She was busy. I guess she was busy being ill. That's the truth. She was working on a book, though, apparently. And it did come out with Steve. Steve Falconer. He couldn't make the show, which is too bad, too. So here's my All Shots Clot show. Or here's the allshotsclot.com blog. And I don't really like the layout at all, so I'll probably fix that up one of these days. I have so many things that I want to do with the website, the Fakeologist site, the Fakeologist forums. And I just have to remind myself to share the stream every time. And we're also on YouTube and Twitter. And we've had quite a few listeners on Twitter lately, which is really great. So thank you all the Twitter guys. I'm not sure how the Twitter people found us. I don't really do a lot of tweeting. But, yeah, thanks everyone for joining. I didn't do a show on Sunday yesterday because it was Easter Sunday. And that's a big day in Christian North America. It's similar to Christmas, I would say. And I just saw too many families getting together. And we had a bit of a get-together, so I figured no one would be listening live anyway. So why bother? So I took Sunday off. So Sunday is on. Monday is on now. It's Easter Monday, I think it's called that. So make sure you call in. The phone numbers are on the bottom of the screen. So call in with your vax injury. Or if you want to just talk about any good videos, any content creators in and around vaccines, give me a call. And let me just remove Tracy Northern from my favorites here on Skype. We're on Skype too. I guess I won't be calling her anymore, which sucks. But call in if you want, and we'll have a chat. Otherwise, I'm going to play a couple videos. Read a really good Substack by MidwesternDoctor.com. And then we will go away because there's a hockey game on tonight. And even though I don't believe in sports entertainment as a real event, I do enjoy the entertainment part of it. So that's what we'll do tonight. And then we'll resume our normal, well, it's our normal schedule. Monday's our normal day for this. On Tuesday, we'll talk to Lynn or Tell. Wednesday, we'll talk with Fake Nukes Phil because he's constantly kicking it out. And Thursday will be Frank. And that's how I run my week. Don't forget, I have other blogs, the Fakeologist blog. This is the main webpage here. This is the blog page here, where I talk about media fakery and psyops. And we also have this blog, moreab.fakeologist.com. I'm sure you all are not aware of this one, because this is where I talk about non-fakeology stuff. And then we have my Twitter-like webpage called shorts.fakeologist.com. And what else do we have? We have the Fakeologist forums. These are all websites that I administrate. So take a peek over here. And I don't have an All Shots Clot forum per se, but I would put it here. I guess I should put it over here on the fakeologistforums.com. Because this actually gets quite a few hits. As you can see on the bottom left, we have 500,000 hits whenever I started counting a year or two ago. So there's that. So that's the Fakeologist forums. And of course, FakeoTube, which is here. Why isn't it showing? Oh, it is showing. This is FakeoTube. And I put all my videos that I think are important here. And this is the FakeoTube chat, which is pretty quiet. I think a lot of people are off today. And yeah, that's about it. So All Shots Clot is the webpage. And we'll take a look at this tonight. And hopefully someone will call in. Otherwise, we will return to the hockey game. Okay. So let me read this really interesting post here. And that is, what makes all vaccines so dangerous? This is a huge post, by the way. A really huge post, and I highly recommend it. A Midwestern doctor. This guy's anonymous. I said, why don't you come on the show? And let's see if he responds. I don't think he responded. He just gave me a heart. And this is exploring the forgotten but critically important science of zeta potential. Now, I don't really understand this, but the reason I like this post is because it was promoted by Dr. Andrew Molden. Now, Dr. Andrew Molden was the Canadian who died mysteriously in his 40s, and he was studying all kinds of different factions of science and medicine, and he was one of the few people that had the time or the inclination to put together all the aspects of vaccinations, and he was trying to figure out what was it about vaccines that causes such a wide range of disabilities and death. What is it about it? And he had a couple theories, and I think a Midwestern doctor picked up on that and just started talking about it and writing about it. So I'm going to read some of it. Now, I know reading is not the best way to do a podcast, but this is a really important article. So maybe I'll just read the story at a glance part, and then you can dig deep into what he's talking about. But the number one guy he talked about was Andrew Molden. So that's why I decided myself to read the whole thing. And you can see here, it's a very large article. Very large article. And I discovered Dr. Andrew Molden a couple of years ago at the height of this vaccine nonsense. And I have not seen anyone write about Dr. Andrew Molden since. This is one of the very few guys that has written about it. So that's why I thought this is going to be an article worth saving. And that's why we are going to read this. I'm just going to see if he responded to my post that I left. I was one of the first people to read this. So I'll probably be one of the first posts on here. Comments, as I should say. And Substack is really quite a website. I'm against putting my work on anyone else's platform because they can get rid of it at any time. Let's just see if my article is here. Oh, yeah. Okay. He never replied to it, though. Okay. I think he wants to stay anonymous as well. But at least he read it and liked it, which is great. Oh, I can like my own comment. Isn't that nice? Okay. So let's start reading. And back to the article. Here we go. Story at a glance. Since vaccines frequently cause a wide range of side effects, this makes it challenging to identify what the common thread between those injuries. Okay, missed a word there. One of the best candidates that has been put forward is vaccination triggering microstrokes throughout the body, a process which I believe also underlies many other chronic diseases. In the 1960s and earlier, a large volume of forgotten research was produced showing that blood cells clumping together was the root cause of a variety of diseases. In parallel, Chinese medicine came to an identical conclusion, which has recently been validated by modern scientific instrumentation. The science of colloidal chemistry and zeta potential has shown that the primary factor which causes blood cells to clump together are the electrical charges present around them. Many of the most harmful agents in existence, e.g. aluminum or the COVID spike protein, I don't know if those are two different things in his mind, coincidentally also happen to contain a positive charge which is remarkably effective at clumping fluids together. I believe impaired zeta potential, especially in the modern era, is the root cause of a wide range of diseases, and that treating zeta potential is one of the most effective means to address both acute and chronic illness. Likewise, a strong case can be made that many effective conventional and holistic therapies ultimately work by improving the physiologic zeta potential. And he says, this is a significantly revised version of an article I wrote 2 years ago on the topic. So actually, I think I remember this. Yeah, wow, 2 years ago. So that's this article here. What makes, okay, so he already, I knew I recognized this guy. Wow, 2 years ago is such a long time. Okay, so this is a repeat article. Okay, I'm just going to quickly zip through it here. I'll see if there's anything different. And I think I commented on this too. Do-do-do. Oh, I see. Not too many comments, because this was a paid post maybe back in the day. Okay, so we'll go back to the original post then, which is right here. And of course, we have to reshare the screen because I closed the window. And actually, I should share the screen again without the audio. All right, we got 27 people watching now on Twitter and YouTube. So anyone just joining us, please call in. The number's at the bottom of the screen, 810-666-1984 or 902-400-1984. Tell us your vaccine injury or death story. If they're still happening, I want to hear about them. Also on Skype, does anyone use Skype? Call in at Fakeologist. If you're on Discord, you can also find me on the Discord at Fakeologist. We are everywhere. Okay, so let's finish reading a bit more of this article. Many problems in medicine are ultimately a product of the diagnostic paradigm a physician brings to the situation. This holds particularly true for complex illnesses, which, due to their complexity, cannot be solved by the majority of doctors and result in the patient continually struggling with their condition. A hallmark of complex conditions is that the same disease can cause a wide variety of symptoms depending upon the person, and likewise, that numerous complex illnesses can present with very similar symptoms, e.g. fibromyalgia versus chronic fatigue syndrome. Because the symptoms are so varied, severe, and inexplicable, doctors have not been specifically trained to recognize them, typically won't, and often will default to assuming they must be psychiatric in nature. This very much characterizes vaccine injuries. As you can read hundreds of reports from over a century ago, which I'm currently compiling for an upcoming article, which describe many of the same inexplicable symptoms seen now in those with COVID-19 vaccine injuries. But simultaneously, there is immense variability between each individual report. In turn, my interest has been in determining that the underlying mechanisms of harm could be. Presently, I believe there are four primary things which underlie vaccine injury. First, as we will be discussing in the upcoming article, there is a long-standing issue with vaccinations being improperly produced and contaminated with things that can injure the recipient. This, in turn, is why vaccine hot lots repeatedly emerge. Note, some evidence exists, e.g. a DPT vaccine memo revealed through litigation, that this issue was largely solved by distributing each lot throughout the country so that it would be much harder to identify the hot ones as injuries would not cluster in a single area. Because vaccines are designed to unnaturally activate the immune system, they can create long-term immunological dysfunction and off-target immunity. This most commonly manifests through the immune system attacking the body. There is a lot of evidence tying vaccination to a myriad of autoimmune disorders, but other immunological issues, e.g. varying degrees of immune suppression, are also sometimes observed after vaccination. 3. When cells are threatened, they will sometimes enter a primitive metabolic state to protect themselves, where the mitochondria stop performing their normal functions. This state is supposed to be temporary, but some, myself included, believe cells can get stuck in this response, and that an unresolved and persistent cell danger response underlies many chronic and complex conditions. In turn, when the cell danger response is treated, many severe conditions, e.g. those linked to vaccination like autism, have been observed to resolve as well. Vaccines cause moderate to severe impairment of the fluid circulation of the body through impairing the physiologic zeta potential, which causes fluids like blood to clump together, and to a lesser degree by having the white blood cells enter capillaries where, due to their larger size, they obstruct the flow of blood through the capillary. I think that's one of the most important concepts that this whole article lays out. And I've said this a few times as well, and I've highlighted that video from Dr. Andrew Molden, who said that as well. In this newsletter, I've tried to bring attention to the subject of zeta potential, as I believe it underlies a wide variety of chronic conditions. But outside of a few niche areas, e.g. designing lipid nanoparticles for drug delivery or how the ESR test works, there is no knowledge of the concept within medicine. My focus was specifically down to the zeta potential concept after I realized many of the mysteries of COVID-19 and later the vaccine were a result of the spike protein being extremely disruptive to the body's zeta potential. In short, I believe that if the zeta potential was instead recognized and understood by the medical system, patient outcomes would significantly improve. So next he talks about Dr. Andrew Molden. And I'm going to go through a bit of this article because he's my favorite doctor that was mentioned here. I guess he's the only... No, there was one other down here. Let me just see who else he talked about. Thomas Riddick. Okay. He was before Dr. Andrew Molden by a long shot. And I guess there was just the two. Okay. Andrew Molden was a Canadian PhD neuroscientist who focused on childhood development and acquired brain injuries, and then subsequently became a doctor specializing in neuropsychiatry. During Molden's clinical training, he came across numerous cases of young children who developed textbook neurological signs of strokes none of his colleagues recognized. And over time, he noticed some of those children would subsequently develop severe neurological disorders, such as autism or losing the ability to speak. As Molden began to try and understand what could be causing all of this, it became very clear the initial strokes followed vaccination, sometimes within hours of a vaccine. Okay. Previously, to explain this extremely cruel phenomena of medical gaslighting, I illustrated how well-intentioned doctors typically cannot see signs of a condition unless they were specifically trained to look for them. I believe this is primarily because relatively few doctors have the perceptual capacity to continually monitor the entire patient in front of them, which is necessary for many diagnostic insights, and instead must filter the patient through the diagnostic algorithms that were taught in their medical education. How often is that, huh? You go to the doctor, he orders some tests, he reads the results of the tests, he doesn't even look at you, and then he prescribes drugs based on the different readings from the tests. This is how doctors work today. Everything is testing. They just really don't give a damn about your overall, who you are, what you eat, how you sleep, how you behave. None of that's important. It's all down to that damn blood test. And you go in one day, you get the requisition for the blood test, and then you wait a week, and he reads the blood test, usually just before you walk in the door, and out you go with a prescription. That is medicine today. Anyone agree with that? So, quite remarkably, Molden was one of the first doctors to realize the same subtle signs doctors, and particularly neurologists, are taught to look for in adults to assess for signs that a stroke occurred should also be identified in children, as typically doctors only recognized overt signs of a pediatric stroke, such as a large facial droop. Because no one diagnoses these less obvious strokes in infants, we are left with a variety of conditions that are written off as the infant being cute or having a disorder of unknown cause. For example, esotropia, a fancy term for the eye turning inwards, which affects 2% of the population. One of the major challenges in science is making the invisible visible so it can be researched in a reproducible fashion. And typically, the smaller something is, the more challenging this is to do. Fortunately, in neurology, that invisibility can be bypassed because when there is a problem somewhere in the brain, commonly as a result of impaired blood flow to that region, the corresponding function that region is responsible for will become disrupted as well. In turn, with appropriate training, a physical examination can often detect that disruption and hence determine exactly where a stroke has occurred. In many cases, the status of the cranial nerves provides the most accessible window for evaluating the brain, which is why all medical students are taught to cursorily evaluate them. Unfortunately, they rarely perform in-depth examinations that can tell you much more about that patient, such as the more subtle manifestations of their microstrokes. Most nerves that travel throughout your body, not counting those that remain within the central nervous system, originate from your spinal cord. The 12 cranial nerves are the exception and instead originate from the brain, with most originating in the brain stem. The cranial nerves within the brain stem are vulnerable to strokes because of the anatomy of the circulatory system. In most cases, the tissues of the body especially those that cannot tolerate an interruption of their blood supply, like the heart and brain, have multiple sources of blood so that a disruption within one of their blood vessels is unlikely to cause a critical failure. Watershed areas denote locations where that redundancy does not exist. And as a result, strokes are much more common within the watershed areas. Let me look up the word watershed, because I was getting it backwards. Watershed. Let's see here. Aha, makes sense. A watershed is a dividing ridge between drainage areas. The watershed of the Himalayas does not lie along the line of its highest peaks, as in most mountain ranges, but about 100 miles farther north. A region or area bounded peripherally by a divide and draining ultimately to a particular water course or body of water. Or definition 2, a crucial dividing point, a line or factor. Okay, so it's the dividing ridge between drainage areas. So that's what watershed means. So we'll get back to the article here. Okay. Watershed areas denote locations where that redundancy does not exist, and as a result, strokes are more common within the watershed areas. Many of the cranial nerves in the brainstem originate in watershed areas, which allows their dysfunction to serve as an early warning sign blood flow is being disrupted throughout the brain. Additionally, the blood vessels that feed the back of the brain where these cranial nerves are located are narrower than those that feed the front of the brain. 20% of cerebral blood flow originates from the back, 80% from the front. This is important because an increased thickness of blood will always reduce blood flow, and that thickening has the greatest impact on smaller blood vessels, e.g. the narrower arteries that feed the brainstem. The cranial nerves that typically indicate the presence of vaccine-caused microstrokes due to their less robust blood supply, are those responsible for controlling the movement of the eyes and facial muscle tone. The three nerves originating from the watershed areas most commonly affected by vaccine microstrokes are as follows. I don't know about you, but I find this is critical. It almost doesn't matter about talking about anything else. If you understand this, you are so far advanced compared to everyone else when it comes to vaccine injuries. Cranial nerve 6. This nerve is responsible for controlling the muscle that makes the eye look outward. When a deficit is present, the eye will often look inwards at rest, less common. And when both eyes look from side to side, the affected side will often jump rather than moving in a slow, continuous motion like the unaffected side, more common. I believe the cranial nerve 6 is the most frequently affected by COVID-19 injuries. Cranial nerve 7. This nerve is responsible for controlling most of the muscles in your face, and one of the most commonly associated issues with this nerve is Bell's palsy, where one side of the face droops downwards. Less easily recognized facial changes can also occur, such as a flattening of the nasolabial fold or the development of a crooked smile. In a previous article that discussed Justin Bieber's recent vaccine injury, I showed how historical photography demonstrates that the age of vaccination has caused widespread cranial nerve damage that has resulted in asymmetrical faces going from being the exception to the norm. How true is that? And where did I learn that the most? From Forrest Moretti. He'd be another great guy to have on site. He has his own podcast. And I haven't been listening to it, mainly because I don't even think I can download it easily from the my podcast app. I'm not even sure. I'll have to look at that. I'm going to link to it on today's show notes, the Forrest Moretti Show. If you want to see that, I will put it in the show notes. But it's a pretty good show. He did many video clips. I posted most of them on FakoTube, the ones I liked. Make sure you go to FakoTube. Forrest Moretti. I played one on one of his videos earlier. And they were really good. I want to see if he has one on crooked. Maybe it's this one. Only 120 views on the FakoTube here. Actually, most of his videos got very few views on my site. Let's play a bit of this just for a change of pace here. If it'll play. I think it'll play. Maybe this is why it won't work. Maybe this is why there aren't very many views. Hold on. Is it still on YouTube?
What's the difference between autism and Asperger's? The difference between may be so obvious it's staring us right in the face. If you or someone you know is on the spectrum and you'd like to understand them better, I have an explanation that for now you won't hear about anywhere else. If I'm right, the difference between autism and Asperger's may explain a lot about what causes it, and hopefully one day how we might better work with those who have it. A few years ago, I started researching this subject and was able to piece together what may be happening. I've written several books about it and hinted at the difference between autism and Asperger's, but as more and more people are getting censored and canceled these days, I wanted to go ahead and put out a crystal clear explanation with visuals so that other people who may be more accepted by the scientific community might continue this line of research. Ready? Okay, we're coming up on the 80th anniversary of what we currently call autism. First officially recognized in the 1940s, this neurological disorder is affecting more children than ever. Many of you have probably been directly affected by it. Over time, two different sorts of autism have emerged: classic autism and what we call Asperger's syndrome. Many people think of Asperger's as autism-like, a slightly less disruptive version. Deficient social cues, emotional connections, etc. There is overlap, of course, and everyone's different, but for those with Asperger's, there does seem to be something specifically
different. Oh, you can't hear any sound? Okay.
The classic definition of autism. People argue about how to diagnose them, whether they're actually variations of the same thing, but I want to give you an easy way to tell the difference. If you're already familiar with my research, you'll have heard some of this, but I don't believe autism is genetic in any way. They've tried for decades
to understand them better.
I have an explanation that, for now, you won't hear about anywhere else. If I'm right, the difference between autism and Asperger's may explain a lot about what causes it, and hopefully one day how we might better work with those who have it. A few years ago, I started researching this subject and was able to piece together what may be happening. I've written several books about it and hinted at the difference between autism and Asperger's, but as more and more people are getting censored and canceled these days, I wanted to go ahead and put out a crystal clear explanation with visuals so that other people who may be more accepted by the scientific community might continue this line of research. Ready? Okay, we're coming up on the 80th anniversary of what we currently call autism. First officially recognized in the 1940s, this neurological disorder is affecting more children than ever. Many of you have probably been directly affected by it. Over time, two different sorts of autism have emerged: classic autism and what we call Asperger's syndrome. Many people think of Asperger's as autism light, a slightly less disruptive version. Deficient social cues, emotional connections, etc. There is overlap, of course, and everyone's different, but for those with Asperger's, there does seem to be something specifically different about it than those with the classic definition of autism. People argue about how to diagnose them, whether they're actually variations of the same thing, but I want to give you an easy way to tell the difference. If you're already familiar with my research, you'll have heard some of this, but I don't believe autism is genetic in any way. They've tried for decades to find a genetic link, and despite hundreds of millions, possibly billions of dollars, they haven't really found anything significant. I think this is because autism isn't genetic. It's the result of a brain injury, more specifically, a brain stem injury. Don't go away. Give me 2 minutes, and I'll prove it to you. The evidence is so obvious you can literally see it on someone's face. It's staring right at you. The brain stem is the little part of your brain that connects it to your spinal cord. It powers your sense of taste, smell, hearing, your ability to move your eyes and your face, among many other important things. My theory is that autism and the Asperger's syndrome are often the result of injury to a particular side of the brainstem. They're asymmetrical. With autism, the left side of the brainstem is affected. With Asperger's, it's the right. That's the difference. Autism is a left side brainstem injury, and Asperger's is a right side issue. I'm going to show you exactly what I'm talking about, and it'll blow your mind. Remember that your brain's two halves have specific functions. The left side of your brain is used for rational thought, language processing, science, and math. The right side of your
brain
is
used for... All right, we got a caller in there, so we'll take a break here. Never mind, he stopped.
Abstract thought, creativity, music, the arts, humor. When you have a problem on the left side of your brain, you won't be as good at linear, rational thinking, but you'll often excel in other things, the arts, creative things. If you have a right side problem, as is the case
Hold
with Asperger's.
Time, 2 minutes,
right, we'll take,
43 seconds.
We'll take a phone call. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
This is John the Beggar from the South Shore of the St. Lawrence Seaway.
John, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good, pretty good. You asked if anyone agreed with you that doctors are testing. That's the first thing they do, and that's what's happened to me.
Yeah.
I'm $6,000 worth of blood tests for what usually is $500 worth of blood tests for a surgery. My surgery got called off. They saw something in my lung, but my heart pulmonary specialist looked at it and he said, I don't see a problem, but the surgeon wouldn't do it. Now I've got to go to a pulmonologist.
Wow.
To get checked into. But they just run test after test after test.
Yeah. Well, that's... They can't really argue with the test because the test results are interpreted in an official way. So if the numbers are this, then they prescribe this. And he really gets them off the hook when it comes to actually a holistic approach to the patient.
Definitely. I agree with you. I do go to a chiropractor, too, which who has helped me a lot lately. I finally went back to him after my hip surgery, and he takes it real gentle in the spinal area by the hip. But I've gotten better since going back to him. But I do have to get some of these things tested, and as I get older, you just tend to wear out.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm getting older, too, actually. Strangely enough, I didn't think I'd ever get older, but I knew eventually I'd wear out. What do you think of this Forrest Moretti? This is where he's talking about the left and right side of the brain being injured by vaccines, and they exhibit differently. They present differently.
That's entirely possible. You have that issue of what side controls what.
Yeah.
And to the issue in ambidextrous people, what is with their brain. And then you've had some people that have injury to one side of the brain that's supposed to control certain functions, but they still function. It does the brain rewire itself and various things like that. And with vaccine injuries and stuff like that, no telling how the brain rewires itself, trying to get around the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to keep playing this and then end the show, but I just really, these are my favorite topics when it comes to vaccine. Forrest Moretti, Andrew Molden, Catherine Watt. I think if we just focused on these people, then everyone would know a lot more. I just think these guys have it right, and I want to present them to the world.
Definitely, definitely. If you look, like I say, the allergies, peanut allergies in America.
Oh, yeah.
Kids have peanut allergies because they make some of the vaccines in peanut oil.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
in Israel...
Yeah.
In Israel, they use sunflower oil, and kids get allergies to sunflowers, not peanuts. I think that's right in itself, just proof right there that we should stop all this nonsense.
The proteins in those substances that when they're in the blood, you become anaphylactic. It's pretty simple. So, yeah, I agree. We just stop with vaccines altogether. It would be a lot higher or a lot better off.
It's amazing how many people I know, I tell them stop taking vaccines, and some have agreed because the COVID vaccine, they've gotten sicker, but they don't understand that flu shots, pneumonia shots, shingles shots, tetanus shots, our pertussis shots are all vaccines. So are boosters, updates, and upgrades. And some doctor can fancy talk them into taking that crap.
They're all vaccines, yeah. They're all they all do the same thing, yeah.
Yep. The tetanus shot is, I think, the stupidest one, because if you get cut by this rusty nail or something, and if it's going to infect you, then you go to the doctor and he says, take a tetanus shot. Well, the shot would take time to affect your system and kick in to kill this. I would think that would have to be done before, long before. You got the cut. Right away when you got a cut, you should go on antibiotics.
Yeah, I fell for the tetanus shot too, but that's my greatest regret in the last few years, but that won't happen again. So that convinced me.
Yes, well, thank God more people are waking up, and even if some of the sources aren't real credible that talk against the vaccine, at least it gets people thinking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All right.
Okay. Well, good night.
No. Go ahead. You had one more point.
That website in BitChute, Welcome the Eagle 88 by Albert Benavides. I think, like I had said to you once before, he's a very honest man because Dr. McCullough on a program tried to get him to set up some sort of a consulting service, and he had no interest in that. He was just interested in having the information out there for people. And he was also saying that some of the results he gets today on VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, are 2 and 3 years old. It's like they're holding them back. And I have no doubt about that. You might see higher death numbers if they let it all go out.
Welcome the Eagle here. I think this is him. He's on VAERSAware.com. That's his website.
Yeah.
Okay. He's got a Substack as well. Okay, that's great. I'm going to look at him again.
Okay, well, thank you for letting me come on, and have a good night.
Thank you very much for the tip, and thanks for being a regular listener and caller. I appreciate it, John.
Okay, good night.
Take care, good night. There's John. He's always there. I appreciate John the Beggar's calls. I appreciate all calls, of course. John the Beggar always gets the calling started. I think a lot of people are shy and or uninspired, but John always gets a good comment, and we really appreciate him. And we're going to put his link to welcometheeagle.substack.com in the show notes here at show number 11, ASC011, allshotsclot.com. So thank you, John the Beggar. And we have a few people listening live at fake11.com/stream1. fake11.com/stream1. Okay, the article that I'm talking about, P. Trippa, is, I'm going to put it in the show notes. Well, actually, sorry, it's at allshotsclot.com. Just go to allshotsclot.com. And I'm reading from that article, actually. Allshotsclot.com. Let's just make sure I have that website up. Allshotsclot.com, and I'll show you. So this is the call-in show notes, and what makes all vaccines so dangerous? That is the Substack that I posted from midwesterndoctor.com. Let's finish with Forrest Moretti and let him keep talking.
Your brain can be more fully used for scientific and mathematic thought. You will seem extremely smart. Your language processing will be incredible. The reason they call people with Asperger's little professors. But your social skills may suffer. You won't be able to pick up on social cues as well. Humor will be difficult for you. You probably won't be as artistic or creative as you'd like. When there's an injury on one side of the brainstem, it appears that the majority of your brain becomes available for the other side to use. So you become really good at one thing, but often not so good at the other. This is why you often see artistic prodigies with autism. Their entire brain is being used for right-brained activity because the left side of the brainstem is not functioning perfectly. They may not make for a good scientist or engineer, but their artistic skills are off the chart. This is often why you will see scientific and mathematic prodigies with Asperger's. They may not get your jokes, but they can perform amazing numerical calculations instantly. Okay, you may not believe me yet, but I think I can convince you this is what's going on. You can see it right on people's faces. Remember when I said that one of the things the brainstem does is control your facial muscles? If you have a problem with one side of your brainstem, it might cause one of your eyes to not point where it's supposed to go, or your smile not to be even. With autism, it's a left-sided brainstem issue. That means the left side of your face may show some weakness. So, if I just cycle through some pictures of people who are diagnosed with autism, you will see it. It's obvious. Sometimes they can only smile on the right side because the left is not working, or sometimes their left eye won't point exactly in the right direction. But over and over, you'll see pictures of people with autism, and you'll notice the left side of their face is weaker than the right. If that's correct, then you would expect to see the opposite with people with Asperger's, right? People with Asperger's have right-sided issues, so the right side of their face would show weakness. And incredibly, this is exactly what you see. All these pictures are of people who supposedly have Asperger's diagnoses. Over and over, you can see the weakness on the right side of their face. Sometimes it's their smile, Other times, it's their right eye that's not pointed correctly. Either way, it's obvious that people with Asperger's have something going on with the right side of their brain. You can see it on their face. This is why they may be a little bit more socially awkward. This is why they may be really good at math or science, but not get your jokes. Other people who are musically and artistically inclined, like myself, smile like this. We tend to have weakness on the left side of our face, possibly because we have left side brain injury. Now you're probably thinking, he's not diagnosing himself with autism, is he? This is what's interesting. You've heard of people talk about the autism spectrum, you know, being on the autism spectrum. You'll hear people say they're actually autistic because no one believes them. They sense that something's off, but it's not enough to qualify for a diagnosis. If autism and Asperger's aren't genetic, but are instead brainstem injuries, I think that explains why there's such a wide spectrum. Some people are extremely mild. It may have been more easily detected when they were children, but as they grew up, they learned to accommodate and compensate, and you really can't even notice it anymore. There are obviously other children who have a worse situation, and their improvements may not be so dramatic. Their parents are some of the most dedicated, hardworking, loving people I've ever met, and in a way, you can see why it might hurt for someone with no visible problems to call themselves actually autistic. I get that. It minimizes the amount of pain these parents have had to deal with when people begin to think of their children's condition as some mild quirk, when in reality, for a lot of other people, it's extremely challenging, impossible some days. Knowing that, I want to look at a few famous people because I think it will help explain their sometimes unexplainable behavior. Greta Thunberg, the climate activist, well, I think she's actually stated an Asperger's diagnosis. Right side facial weakness? Check. Just like we would expect. That's the smile of someone with Asperger's. What about Bill Gates? Some people have said he has some autistic-like tendencies. Left side facial weakness? Yes. Remember, if you have left side brain issues, your right, creative, artistic side is likely to be much stronger. This is why you'll often see so many artists and comedians with left side weakness. The right side of their brain is able to work double time. This is likely why someone like Steve Jobs, notoriously socially awkward and extremely smart, shows signs of a right-sided issue. You might can make the case he had a touch of Asperger's. Same for George Lucas, known to be difficult to communicate with and a poor sense of humor. Looks like the smile of someone with Asperger's to me. Another thing that is kind of fascinating, you remember hearing that the left side of your brain controls the right side of your body and vice versa? The right side of your brain controls the left side of your body? Remember that? Well, what's interesting is you can frequently guess whether someone is left-handed or not by looking at their face. If they have left side facial weakness, because of that crossover thing, they are likely to have right-sided body weakness. This means if you see someone with left-sided facial weakness, they will often be left-handed. It's the opposite of what you would think. Left-side facial weakness means they'll likely be left-handed. Right-sided facial issues means they'll likely be right-handed. I am left-handed, and I smile like this. My left-side brain doesn't work as good, and because it crosses over in the body, my right hand didn't work as good, so I'm left-handed. But you will see this over and over, especially with musicians, actors, and comedians. The right side of their brain works best, and as a result, they're left-handed. Lady Gaga, left side issue perhaps? She's left-handed. Will Ferrell, left-sided facial weakness? Left-handed. Josh Jackson, see how his left eye wanders a bit? Left-handed. Ashley Jenkins, lazy eye on the left side, right brain dominant, and left-handed. Comedians, musicians, so many left-handed, which would indicate right brain dominance. People have always wondered why this is, and I think it explains it. What's really interesting is to go through the cast of Harry Potter. Daniel Radcliffe, he has the smile of Asperger's, and I've heard him mention how socially awkward he often feels. We'd expect him to be right-handed, and he is. Rupert Grint has the right side weakness smile, and he's right-handed. But Matthew Lewis, who played Neville Longbottom, has the left side weakness smile, and he, like we would expect, is left-handed. To be clear, I'm not diagnosing anyone with anything, but the pattern is obvious. Many with autism smile like this. Many with Asperger's smile like this. Not always, but very often. Maybe this will help you understand someone close to you. For me, it has really helped. Autism appears to be issues with the left side of your brain. Asperger's appears to be issues with the right. You can see it in their behaviors and proficiencies. You can often see it on their face. One more thing, in case you're still doubting my theory. If you don't know this already, autism and Asperger's are far more prevalent in boys, 3 or 4 to 1. I'm fairly certain why this is, but I'm not going to talk about it right now because it's actually disturbing and is covered in detail in 2 of my books. But if you look around and start seeing crooked smiles or misaligned eyes, you will immediately notice something. It's mostly males. There are very few girls with crooked smiles. In fact, there are about 3 or 4 males with crooked smiles for every 1 female. Don't trust me. Look for it. Count them yourself. You'll see that I'm right. Why is that? Why is the ratio of crooked smiles and misaligned eyes by gender the same as it is with autism? The spectrum is much wider than we realize. That's why. Some people get a tiny amount of damage that doesn't cause language issues or sensory processing.
By the way, I think the reason is body fat. I know that young girls probably don't have very much more body fat than young boys, but I think there's enough fat that absorbs the poison. And as the girl goes into puberty, then the hormone that releases the menstrual lining of the uterus, or the lining of the uterus every month, that hormone releases the toxins that are stored up in the body fat. And that's why most females get present with so-called autoimmune disease when they enter into puberty because of the whatever the hormone is. I can't remember it right now. It could be progesterone that causes the monthly menstrual flow. I don't know if that's what he said in his books, but that is one of my theories there that could be true. I'm going to finish this video because it is really good. This is basically the crooked smile theory. And Forrest is probably one of the only ones that talks about this. And look around in your own world to see if you agree with it.
Disorders or intestinal issues. Unfortunately, others do. One last thing I almost forgot about, actually. Autism versus Asperger's. Remember, this is autism, left side brain injury, and this is Asperger's, right side brain injury. Did you know there are about 8 or 9 cases of autism for every 1 or 2 cases of Asperger's? And as you start to notice crooked faces, you'll notice a pattern. Most smiles are crooked like this, left side weakness. In fact, about 8 or 9 are right side high, left side low. The other 1 or 2 are the opposite, left side high, right side low. The same ratio as autism to Asperger's. Don't believe me, look for yourself. Catalog them. you will notice far more males with crooked smiles, and you will notice far more smiles like this, the smile of autism, than this, the smile of Asperger's. The ratio of males to females and autism to Asperger's is the same, even just by looking at people's faces. Amazing. Many of these people don't have diagnoses. They would not be considered on the spectrum. But if you know these people and have ever wondered about why they are so good at this or deficient at something else, their smile may tell you why. It's a fascinating subject, and I'm only touching the surface of it, but I cover it completely in a book I wrote called Crooked: Man-Made Disease Explained. It covers this and many other autoimmune issues and how many of them tie together. Obviously, there are other things at play, gut issues, sensory processing, etc., that I haven't talked about in this short video, but regardless, I hope this might help you understand what's going on with you or someone you love. I have several other books that tell the true stories about polio and autism, and trust me, they're probably not what you've been told. The truth is much different than you hear on television. The books are available on Amazon currently and through my personal website at forestmoretti.com. I hope they may give you some insight into understanding things a bit better. Thank you for listening.
All right, there is Forrest Moretti. And I'm sorry I played the whole thing through, but I just thought I remembered that it is just such a good... Such a really good piece that I thought I'd play it. All right. Well, it's been about an hour. We got one call. Thank you, John the Beggar, for calling in. But that's all the time we have. It's been about an hour. And I just talk about vaccine injuries, and all the things surrounding that topic. And if you want to learn more about what I talked about, go to allshotsclot.com. That's where I post my vaccine injury videos. There's lots there. It does not show up on fakeologist.com because it's just too big a topic. But I'm just going to continue with this show every week, talking for about an hour about what I find, sometimes going on tangents, sometimes reading Substacks. But I don't have to really talk too much about too many different websites in one night, because if you're really interested in following up, that's more than enough material to go over and think about. All right, don't forget, this is Value for Value. You pay whatever you think this show is worth. So if you think this show is worth a couple bucks, like some people, then send me a couple bucks at fakeologist.com/donate. Just use this simple form. You don't need any accounts. You don't need to be registered anywhere. You just need a credit card. So you can plug it in for one time or monthly donations. And that's the way to do it. Otherwise, we accept Monero and Bitcoin and PayPal. I know this button doesn't work right. I'll get that fixed. But that's how you can keep this work going and support this work. Support my video platform like FakoTube. FakoTube is where I post all this information in video form. So make sure you take a look at FakoTube.com. And tomorrow we'll have Lynn Ertel on, where we will just talk about the week's events. Maybe we'll go follow up on Baltimore a week later. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week. Call in next week with your vaccine injury story. Don't forget, we have an audio chat. Audio chats are where we let different people call in and talk on their own. They can have their own show. They can do their own interact with other fakeologists or all shots clotters. Either way, check it out, and we'll see you guys tomorrow. Thanks, everyone, for joining, and I appreciate your support. Take care. Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton.